Thank you. Can we visit it? We're going into the questions for the City of Metro Johannesburg. Doing this engagement, we must be able to measure deliverables. And it is very, very difficult to get that information out of the presentations. Because that's why we are doing this exercise. It's not just meeting you, but it is to measure what has happened. And for the future, that presentations be compiled in that way. And that's where the National Treasury can also assist to give that guidance to the municipalities and the metros that we will engage with, because it will also assist our research unit and our content advisor that do the analysis for us as members of the committee. And this goes for any institution or municipality or government department that appears before us. So that's a very important point. And I think Professor Jan Everson will be very happy that we are using his term. Yeah, he likes this term. Are there questions to the Metro Johannesburg? Gauteng is the economic outcrop not only of South Africa but of Africa. When you fly from abroad and the plane enters over the Sinai, then you start seeing things are happening down below. And when you fly into Owatambo Airport, you can see the infrastructure. It's something to be proud of. But it must be proud also to maintain it. Are there questions on both Gaia, on both the launch?
Saying that, just a few questions of clarity. The identical buildings, according to your presentation, the area, want the people who want to develop and so and so, some of them belong to private sector. Some of the owners that disappeared. How do you plan to get over that? Because you cannot just somebody believe. It will have legal implications. And explain how do you plan to get around that? Of course, it would be good if you to develop those buildings. I mean, if you go to Joburg and learn many times, in a mess up. And the second thing is that you also spoke about I trusted you. You picked that up on TV, especially the youth. What is it? Is it that the council is doing to assist those people to get out of rehabilitation of this drug area, to put it in a project term? And the third one is that I haven't heard much about the development of these structures. Development that would speak to the private sector being involved. Development that will get all the government departments involved, SOEs, and the municipalities. And so that you can what you are saying in your presentation is only to cost for the poor,
other churches. I don't think there's only 13 other churches, there might be more. But thank you for delivering the service. In the rural areas, this is quite a crisis, especially my constituency. We've got 600 kilometers of gravel and 70 kilometers of tar. This is something to commend you on. Thank you, my report.
Thank you, Chairperson and colleagues, for asking for me. On the question asked by yourself on slide 7 on our poor performance on provision of sanitation in informal settlement, we had a peculiar challenge with the service provider. Whenever we try to award, there were a number of challenges. It's linking to the problem that I said, where I said we are finding a lot of rivals within community who want to do a specific work, and it's resulting in non-award. We just have to manage it better going forward. I think we allowed it to go on for too long. But the non-award is a supply chain issue where we couldn't really award because there were consistent challenges and the interdicts of people saying that person cannot be awarded. And so it sterilizes the process. Legally, you cannot proceed with it, and then you have to provide answers to the community. It's a dilemma. Where you have a tender, but people are requesting additional information, and the court has interdicted the process. We are also just reflecting on that. But we need to, in some cases like this one, we will have to have an element of in-house capacity as well. On the issue of walkways,
just with that matter, do you need assistance? This is the time you can put your case on the table. That's why there's an issue.
Thanks. It's a difficult one to say because the laws allow a losing bidder to query the process and the interdict until, you know, clarity is provided. But when you look at it from service delivery point of view, you see it's really uncalled for. It's such a crucial service that to stop it because people are fighting whether the person who won should have won it. It's just, I don't know what we can do as a municipality other than saying we will then provide the service ourselves.
You may proceed with your reply.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then on the complement on walkways and structures, it also includes the pedestrian bridges. If you look on the after Marlboro, we have huge pedestrian bridges even crossing the highway, and where there are schools and communities living alongside provincial and big roads, we are also doing that. But we are doing it as resources allowing. So the walkways, we are quite successful with that, and we complement that with also donation of bicycles whenever to schools, whenever the money allows, just to make sure that these issues are used. On the old age home, the target is for every old age home to be respected and to receive this chronic medication. And in this program, sometimes we are using EPWP people, but it's also a resource issue. So the rollout is dependent on what we have on our cover. But it's a program that we see it makes the impact because really you can't expect the agent to be collecting this themselves. So it's a program that will continually to make results available for it. Then on the question of hijacked buildings, we have a policy, a bylaw on derelict and bad buildings. So usually if a building is private sector owned, there are avenues that allow us to take, to intervene. The first thing that will happen is that a bad building does not pay for rent and illegal connection, etc. So then you would have a list of the charges that are building owes. Maybe let's say the building is now worth 4 million and it owes 4.5 for municipality. So that is the target for the municipality. Cannot expect to recover 4.5 million of rates and illegal consumption out of a building that owes value less than what is owed. So there are avenues that legally allow us to take over a bad building. In some cases, you can even take it over and demolish it down legally. So that is not a problem whether it was owned by private sector or government. If it's derelict, abandoned, it's in contravention of bylaws, it's a public nuisance, bylaws allow us to take it over, and it becomes our problem. So that will allow us to handle to, it's existing law, it has been done. We have had it. Where we can't place on us and it's a public nuisance, we have to intervene. The drug issue is as much of our problem as a national one. In some communities where the communities themselves take ownership, I'll make example with El Dorado Park, where a community leader wrote to the president, and then there was a task group between every relevant stakeholder to address that problem in that specific community. We started to see that there is an impact, although it started to shift to other areas. I should admit, we don't as yet have a panacea for this one, except for providing rehab centers, because it's linked to the general social ills. When people are not working, I don't have scientific linkages, but they are prone to be most sustainable to be. And it is at the back of addressing these social ills that the mayor has given himself this very steep target of a minimum of 5% growth, of bringing law and order to the inner city. You have seen how he has himself conducted raids in Terrefontein and other areas, Rift Valley. So he has been at the forefront of bringing law and order to this community. But at the end, he's providing opportunities where people can actualize themselves. Development with private sector, we are very much busy with that. If you look, just to make an example, next to Alexander, we have an agreement with VET. That's owned a property called Frankenwell, and then we have Province also as a partner there, and we have got the private sector, all that in relation to making sure that that property is developed. So we have a lot which relates to partnership with the private sector. The issue I talked about the conversion of inner city buildings into high-rise residential and student accord. It's not a project that will be done by the balance sheet of the municipality. That's why I said the mayor will go out, we will go out there, call for expression of interest, and the people will say, yes, I can work on that block, I can develop so many households, I can create so many jobs, this is how it will look. All you need to do for me as a municipality is to guarantee services, bring law and order, chase away the hijackers, and that agreement gets signed, and then the private sector signs off that aspect. So it's not an issue where the municipality is thinking of its own balance sheet. The triangle, I will allow my colleagues to answer that, the economic hub, our cooperation with other metros next to us, together with the public transportation issue and unemployment.
I think there's broad agreement with any high
talking about that golden triangle and the importance of that for economic growth, even at a national level. And in our planning, there's quite a bit of consultation that happens between the neighboring municipalities and metros. And especially when Johannesburg is standing for its social development framework, we ignore the municipal boundary and at least look at what are the economic nodes and hubs that are located outside of our boundary, to make sure that our planning links up with those groups. And we've had intense discussions, especially with Charming and the Renin, in terms of their planning, to make sure that we tie in. Obviously, within the housing development framework, a lot of those discussions have actually taken place in that process to make sure that we start to dovetail. But I think there's room for improvement, especially at a development strategy level, to say that where we develop, the timing of the development, and how that development actually takes place is something that we need to work on. And so the point is taken for better integration at that level. There also the high-intensity region observatory plays a major role in terms of providing a lot of policy solution, but also really good information at a high-wide level, and especially economic information that is really difficult to come by as well. And that also informs the planning for the different metros to say, well, plan within a broader city region context as well. The other issues around integrated public transportation, there once again, I think that's a case in point where we all have BRT systems, but they're not linked yet. There's discussion, there's certainly the ideal to actually link up all the BRT systems, and so there's one cohesive system at the end of the day, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done to integrate that, not only with rail, or the BRT itself, but also with rail and other means of transportation. Traffic congestion, I think, it is a key issue with most world cities, that there's major congestion that's happening. And I think for us, the first point of departure is really to change the mode of transportation so that we are less dependent on private car use and more dependent on good and reliable public transportation. I think the BRTs, how trains and those kinds of interventions are the starting points for that. But if we look at other world cities, and we've had a lot of interaction with some of them, it takes time for the systems to mature, for the systems to be used properly, and in our case, it takes time for the urban environment around those systems to transform into higher density kind of living environments that will make the public transportation work better as well. So it's going to be a transition process, and in terms of city lifetime and city building, 20 years, 10 years is short term. 20 years, it's not a long term thing for the city to achieve something like that. And we think that we would tip that point within the next 20 years within the city of Johannesburg, given the growth trajectories and so forth. But I think the key is that there needs to be high support for public transportation interventions within the city, and that the city form gets concentrated around that. But I just want to add one point to that. I think one of the first questions was really, where are the projects that bring all of this together? And also, if I read the question correctly, links up with not only just development for the sake of development, but also linking the poor into the urban system. And I think in that case in point, from Joburg's side, the inner city provides the golden opportunity. Provides an opportunity to provide massive amounts of housing and jobs in a very central place that's very walkable and
rail service by all means of public transportation and private transportation. And I think for us to get that right, that reinvestment into the inner city is an important point. The other issue is all along the corridors, we also have assimilated land holdings. A lot of it is for social housing, so that we avoid these huge enclaves of poverty, but rather integrate poorer communities within the existing urban areas and make sure that they are very well linked to public transportation and also the social and economic communities within those areas. So it is a comprehensive strategy of making sure that development is not only holistic from an urban functionality point of view, but also from a social and economic integration point of view, that we are putting that together.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the issue around interns, yes, we do. We have interns at different levels, Chair. You know, I've had students that were in my department during their vacation in the past couple of weeks that come through, you know, while they're studying. We do have interns that, and that's the agreement with the University of Johannesburg, Chair. We do also have interns that come through for a two-year period, and what we've seen is a lot of these interns have been absorbed within the city as well. So we basically train them and they get absorbed within the city. Not all of them, but quite a few of them. The other aspect here within the city, we also have the top program. So we basically, we've got students who have passed the CPA. They can actually serve articles within the city in order to become CPA chair. So we've got that program. It was a partnership within National Treasury, and recently we started our own program within the city itself. And this year, Chair, alone, but this is a combination of top students as well as permanent staff, we had six people that have passed the board exam, the Chartered Accountant Board exam. So these are initiatives we've got in the city around that as well. Thank you.
Chairperson, just to add on the issue of the trans problem in the city. Just in terms of looking forward in the 17-18 financial year, the city has started putting together a plan to respond to the issue of trans, something that we have identified as one of the critical things that the city needs to respond to. And to achieve that, we have identified five pilot sites where we will be using our existing training facilities, where we will be training our existing health workers to manage a 24-hour crisis line, as well as using participant drug testing kits and detoxing facilities. The city plans to spend around 6 million rand in that program. So pilot sites have been identified in and around the city within our seven regions. But very importantly, Chair, you indicated earlier what can the NDOC do to assist local government in some of these issues. Local government were not the drug issues, not our competency, the competency of province and the National Department of Social Development. Currently, the city is engaging in talks with the National Department of Social Development to see how we can partner to respond to the drug problem that affects a lot of our residents. So I think those talks, if they advance, the NGOP will be able to play its role to ensure that those partnerships are carried forward. Thank you.
In my province, Northern Cape, in each region, we have what is called the ICR regional structure. And at that level, there's intergovernmental relations exercise is performed. Is it happening in your area?
Yes, we do have the province, Chairperson, but what you were referring to is to be able to respond from a policy point of view as the areas of government to ensure that the drug issues are being addressed at all levels.
So you're right, because the point I want to make is the governance point about governance. It's not just there. It must happen here at regional and lower levels. And that's that engagement. That's where we, as employees, must assist in your employment or constituency. I just want to make that point. Any other inputs? We take the point you just made. Covered.
Yes. A couple of this time, I just based on what I've been reading lately in press through your chapters, and if I can just find out, in terms of the Berlin crisis in the revenue department, can you just comment perhaps what checks and balances are now in place in terms of the Berlin crisis that the municipality has been experiencing so much?
Berlin crisis.
Thank you. What we arrived in the city as a new administration last year, indeed, we knew there was many issues. But upon meeting with the government, we realized that the problem was bigger than what we had anticipated. We had thought within 3 months those legal issues would have polished them to be gone. But deeper than that, we found that there were about more than 100,000 open queries that were not yet resolved. Some of them as old as 2005. As I'm talking to you now, we have gone a long way to resolve that. So the open queries have gone down to less than 40,000. The statement that we have released this week may have created the impression that actually the building crisis is increasing. In hindsight, we could have crafted it better. But however, as a new administration, or during the course of our governance, a problem called the regionalization was introduced. It has so many good benefits, one of which is that instead of taking 21 days to do the actual readings of meters in a month, it now takes only 7 days, which is good. However, it has put some customers in areas because they got double bills during the course of the program. But even those double bills, the other one would be your normal bill, the other one much smaller. But still, for somebody who are very tight in terms of their budget, that small bill does have huge implications in their finances. And that put them in areas. So what we are doing now, we are rehabilitating those customers. There are about 40,000 out of more than 1 million customers. So you can't call them crisis. But we have reinforced them, we have flagged their accounts, and we are reversing the interest that has been accumulated. Our thinking is that by March next year, that would be, we'll have spent now 18 months in government, we would have gone a long way to settle this crisis. Thank you.
Thank you to Johannesburg Metro for your presentation, honoring those appointments. We will now go to Swami, a bit north. But for Johannesburg, Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock, you've got a huge crowd of 62,000 people going to watch the final. Yes. You didn't say a word about that. You can brag about it. Swami, sorry. Yes, sir. Sorry.
My artistic
feet. Swami, you can move to the front if you need to. You sit there. Please introduce your team.
We also
received this document today, this morning, so we will listen to you. You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Marilise Fury. I am the MMC for Finance within the City of Harney. And allow me to please, at the outset, submit my apology for our mayor, Councillor Mpumangi, as well as the city manager and our CFO. We had a very critical mayoral committee meeting today, and the mayor was also scheduled to attend to a violent situation in one of our informal settlement areas, which is an illegal settlement area that has been brewing, and discussions have taken place over a number of weeks. So please accept my apology, but we are here. I would like to introduce my team. On my left here is Nosipho Sheshwayo. She's our group head of city strategies and performance management. And my other colleague at the back is Ntabiseng Mukete. She's in our budget office, so she deals with all the reporting and the budget issues. Thank you very much. I think before I allow my colleague Nosipho to take you through the presentation, please, my apology. We did try and send it through yesterday. It was not successful, and I apologize. But we wanted to keep it quite relevant because it's back-looking, if I can call it that, for the 16-17 financial year. We wanted to make it as relevant as possible and not to have a whole quarter that has not been reported on. So please accept our apologies as far as that's concerned.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you for that. But the administration here may then have look, why couldn't this document be transferred to us in Parliament? Mm-hmm. Is there a problem with the systems? Something must be wrong.
Yeah.
If we can put someone on the moon, we can get the document from Pretoria to Cape Town.
That's why I apologize. Yeah. I think the problem was in our city manager's office and not here. So I'm really a little bit disappointed that we can't show you what we've brought, because we've included some brief videos on what is planned, etc., and what is happening, which will now not be able to do that. But allow me just as an introductory comment. I think the change in the political leadership in the city of Tshwane since last year in August has been an experience, to say the least. It's quite a euphemism, but that's fine. The purpose of the financial year of 16-17, after the 3rd of August, was really focused on three specific areas. You will understand that we inherited a budget that was approved by council, which we had to work with until such time as we could do a mid-year assessment and do an adjustment budget presented to council. So we were challenged with a budget that was not credible, and I'm going to be brutally honest with you. It was not fully funded. It was, in fact, in many instances, difficult to implement because of the factors that went into it. For example, we will touch on that when we get to the numbers. Included on the revenue side was an amount of, on the operating account, was an amount of almost R1 billion that was earmarked for our smart meter project, our smart meter contract. Now, I'm sure you would have heard about that as well. Balancing that out on the capital budget was an amount of R950 million that we were supposed to pay our contractor for the smart meter system. So it skews the picture. It makes it difficult to talk to the numbers, but we're going to do our best to put it into perspective. The actual fact is that I refused to pay $950 million to a contractor that we've already paid R3 billion to, and the contract is deemed irregular. We are in court in terms of that contract currently, and it will be it's scheduled for October. So once we get to October, we hope we will have a finalization. But the challenge was really to start looking at how do we deal with historic, irregular, unauthorized wasteful expenditure. Because I can tell you that accumulated over 4 years, the unauthorized expenditure for the city of Tshwane amounted to R5 billion. Unauthorized expenditure. The irregular expenditure, standing currently at almost R2 billion, which is no decision has been made in terms of how do we deal with that irregular expenditure. So we had to go into all of these contracts that have been deemed to be irregular or that have been highlighted in the financial statement to do investigations to decide what are we going to do with those irregular contracts. The our attitude, in particular towards property, is depleted. It is deficient. It doesn't tell us which properties do we own. There's been properties that have been transferred irregularly out of our name historically that we now need to trace. So we are facing a huge volume of historic problems that we are trying to solve. So in the first financial year, our focus was on three particular areas. The focus was firstly on stabilization, to make sure that the city is stable, that we get a grip on our financial position, that we put measures in place to begin to be financially sustainable, to begin to address a funded position for the city, if we look at our ratios, that we begin to put a plan in action of generating our own capital funds to be able to invest into infrastructure. It was simply not there. The cash flow was disastrous, and that is where we began. So the three areas that we focused on were stabilization, revitalization of certain areas, which my colleague will talk to when she deals with the picture of 2016-17, and then also not to lose our focus on delivery, because that's what we are there for. We're there for service delivery, and that is our duty. So we put certain measures in place for cost containment. We put control measures in supply chain, because there was all irregular expenditure had to do with supply chain management issues and irregular contracts. So we put a whole host of control mechanisms into the supply chain processes. We eliminated duplicates in service delivery in various departments, consultants, contractors that were doing exactly the same thing. We focused on wasteful expenditure to reduce all of that. We did a whole organizational structuring in terms of our macro structure, which was finalized. And the staffing has already begun for skilled professional people who are competent in all the various areas that we require. So that is what was needed to say we need to consolidate and stabilize this organization. So you will see from our results that we have managed to scale down on expenditure to the tune of almost 2 billion rand. We have collected our revenues that we were supposed to collect, bar the 950 million rand that was supposed to be paid to us. So if we look at revenue excluding that contract, the smart meter contract, we have collected what we were supposed to collect in the financial year. So this has been a short, very intense period of stabilizing the financial situation. When we look forward, and we will be happy to share with you the plans going forward in the new financial year, which we've not included because we had the brief was a backward view on 1617. But we were most happy to share with you what it is that we've put in place going forward to take the financial sustainability up to a much better level. But we hope to be at the end of this financial year, when the year end entries have been done, to be in a positive operating position, which we are very, very excited about, I must confess. So I will now ask Nosipho to take you through the presentation, and when we get to the financial part and just an introduction, which is, I think, it's an attachment to the presentation, Ntabiseng will highlight that. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, not a long presentation, but it's got a lot of graphics which are going to take you from the CBD of Pretoria straight into Pretoria, so that you're able to see what is it that you've done, because you want us to account for the previous financial year.
You got a real picture.
That's what you get. So as a start of the presentation that you have, it's printed back to back. Unfortunately, there are no page numbers, but I will go in sequence. I'll go in sequence the way that it is printed. We adopted a new vision in the city, and our vision is a prosperous capital city through fairness, freedom, and opportunity. And the three things that the MMC spoke about earlier on, which is stabilization, revitalization, and delivery, also encompass these three values of fairness, freedom, and opportunity. If you now look at where we are as the city of Tshwane, who we are, if you flip the page in slide number 4, it shows the map of South Africa and it splits the population of the various metropolitan municipalities. So you will see that Buffalo City is an example. Sorry to anyone who comes from Buffalo City. They're not our peers because they're only dealing with 2% of the total population of the country. But we are sitting at 6%, we are comparative to Ekurhuleni municipality, Ethekwini municipality, which is at 7 and the like. And these are the things that I know that members of this committee consider when it comes to allocation of certain specific grants and things like those. I thought I would just highlight that one. In terms of how we are especially now organized, there are 7 regions in the city, each of different size. The largest population in the city, you would find it to be in region, you find it in region 6. So your region 6 are your areas like your Mamelodi areas, your eastern part of the city, and then your region 1, areas like your Harangu, Wakoshambuve, former Black Township areas, and obviously the inner city, which is region 3, which has got the dense population in the city. Now, still, while we're setting the context, we use, we rely on the census numbers. In fact, we rely on census aid to give us the numbers as to how we need to plan. You're dealing with almost 1 million households that you need to provide services to. Some of them, a large percentage of these households, they are your customers. So when you talk about issues of billing and revenue, these are the people that you need to service. But you are also dealing with people who are not from the city. You're dealing with embassies. We said to be the second, to have the second highest concentration of embassies after Washington, D.C. So we're playing a balancing act between the local needs and us responding to the needs of our visitors or our guests, whom we're providing service according to certain national protocol that, or international protocol that we must follow. But we're dealing with a big space in terms of geographically. 170 kilometers north to south and 120 kilometers east to west. So you can imagine the kind of complexities that we have to deal with when we have to lay down infrastructure, pipes, and for people to get these services. However, you'll see in the slides that follow that we have done a good job, although our services haven't reached everyone. Bear with me, Chairperson, and flip the page and see what is it that we've done on service delivery in the city. I spoke a little bit about us having about 911,000 households. We've managed to ensure universal access to basic services. Now, when we say universal access, we say everyone in the city has got water. Everyone in the city access some form of waste removal service. So if you are in a formalized area, you are sure to have your litter picked up at least once a week. If you are in an informal area, you are sure to at least receive a plastic bag and there's a skip removal service that is provided. Where we tend to be falling short a little bit is on sanitation service. Although some of our informal settlements receive a sanitation service, others don't. For various reasons, we call it a service when we go as a municipality and we do something, whether it's through hygiene centers or things like those. So we're still working, we're working towards increasing a number of those informal services that are receiving our own services. We've got a part which is rural as well, part of our municipality which is rural. So when we talk about these numbers, we're talking about both rural and urban areas. What we are also dealing with, Chairperson, is to make sure that while we invest for provision of basic services, we also are focused on investing in infrastructure that is going to allow us to grow our economy. So how do we make sure that when we expand, a particular pipeline from area, you know, for area A. That is not just for housing development, but it also caters for economic growth in certain areas. Region 2 being the example in our city, so your areas like your Temba and in Region 5 we call those areas the freeway, if you've heard about Morocco Spring in another region, it's about us providing a service of providing bulk infrastructure for housing and for residential and for economic growth as well. But how do we do it in such a way that it doesn't only come from us, that we start forming these partnerships that are going to make it feasible for us to invest. The following slide, which is still there, gives you a brief in terms of numbers, what is it that we've achieved. And perhaps maybe if I draw your attention to water, we're talking 81% of our formalized households having access to water, 81% as well of our former households having access to electricity, waterborne sanitation, we're talking 79.2% formal households, and around stormwater, which in the city we treat roads and stormwater management as a basic service. We have delivered over 670 kilometers of stormwater network within the previous medium term, and we've constructed 730 kilometers of roads in our city. This somewhat talks to what we had said we would do in terms of the IDP. So it's a good, concise summary of the things that have been done. However, there are other things that are in the IDP. Among others, it's us responding to the housing needs. I don't know how far the presentation from Treasury went yesterday, but I'm sure they would have emphasized what methods are doing around basic services, around transportation, also around housing and economic development. So I'm going into the housing element of our focus as municipalities. So we have a demand, there's an increase in terms of housing in the city, both for people who are employed and for people who are unemployed as well. So the longer the economy doesn't make it turn around, the greater the demand will be for every city, not just for the city of Tshwane. So we're contesting with that. But we are also contesting with the fact that we've got our plans, and my colleagues from Joburg and Ekurhuleni will also agree. We've got our plans in terms of how do we develop sustainable human settlements, which is talking to all these areas of densification being closer to opportunities. However, in some instances, you find that what we then get from our counterparts, be it national government of human settlement or mostly our provincial human settlement, it works against the principles of compaction, densification, sustainable human settlement. So you find that it's still in those farmland areas, which then makes our plans, our special plans, not to be realized. So I thought I would just say that. But another issue that one must also highlight is the fact that you've got land invasion. So in 2 years, you might know that we're working with 117 informal settlements, and then there's a spike in land invasions and more informal settlements are taking place. You can't leave these people without services, so we are forever trying to make sure that they expand the services and wherever, as much as possible, deal with law enforcement elements to make sure that these are controlled. The following slide, Chairperson, is talking to our capital expenditure per project. So most of our housing development or housing projects are funded through the USDG, and we're giving a very detailed picture as to how what is it that we have spent our money on. Overall, if you look at that, we're sitting, we set at 96% expenditure against the budget that was given to us, which is a good percentage. And if you flip over, you will see what this 96% bought. In the previous financial year, we were able to deliver a certain number and amount of houses and roll out infrastructure, because the USDG grant allows you to build houses and roll out infrastructure. But we went beyond what was conventionally known as RCP housing in terms of housing delivery. We even focused on making sure that we take care of the gap market in terms of the social housing units that are developed and what we also call the community residential units as well. There's still a plan for us to intensify our efforts towards upgrading of our informal settlements and with set numbers. We want to gradually and systematically reduce the number of informal settlements in the city, and we know that we won't do that with building houses and formalizing every informal area. So the aim is to take an incremental approach and provide what we might call site and service, and you've gone a long way in terms of that. But let me just talk into the details a little bit when you're focusing on the informal settlements. We know exactly where they are, and we know exactly what kind of services we are providing to our informal settlements. And in that way, we're able to account to a certain extent the cost that came for us to provide services to these informal settlements and the total number of households that are benefiting from the services provided by the city. That's what the slide is basically focusing on. If you now flip over, those pictures are showing the housing typologies that we provide in the city. You see they vary in terms of scale, in terms of housing typology and size. The one on your top right-hand corner, it's showing a medium-density housing development, which is what is being encouraged through your integrated human settlement planning principle. You want to make sure that you have as many people along your transit route. So we do deliver those type of housing. And then you still do have your lower income housing, subsidized housing developments taking place. But housing, building a house and having people occupying it, is not the end of the process. What is also important for us is to make sure that you secure tenure so that people can use housing as a collateral. And hence the focus for the city has been on issuing of title deeds. The slide below is just giving a reflection of what is it that we've done against the issuing of title deeds. Let me just bring to your attention, Chairperson and members of the committee, the fact that sometimes we get these title deeds from province. And we try our best to find the right beneficiary, the right person to give a title deed to. But in some instances, we find that the people are deceased, people cannot be located, and. So you'll forever find that our numbers, what we receive and what we distribute out, the numbers are not always 1:1. In some instances, it's 1:2 because we're dealing with a backlog, and in some instances, it is less. However, there's a strong emphasis because we know that it is beyond the house. It is about us making sure that it is people can use housing as a collateral. My apologies, the slide talks to 2017, 2018. It should have said 2017 on that one. Okay. On the gap market, I've given an example of one of the projects. Perhaps if we had appeared in front of this committee a year back or 2 years back, this would have been, we would have only showed you a model. We're glad to say that we no longer are talking about a model when it comes to gap housing. And our gap housing, when we're focusing on social housing, it is along those transit-oriented routes, so your BRT routes. And the example that I give here is the townland social housing development. If you're familiar with Pretoria, there's an area called Marabastad, and then you've got the CBD. It is right in between, and it's just a stone throw away from one of our bus stations. And this development, it's going to accommodate more than a thousand households in the inner city. So you're trying to shift also the character of the city, where the city was known to be dead from 7 o'clock in the afternoon until the next day. You're bringing more people to stay in the city so that it becomes a 24-hour city, and your infrastructure, your TRT infrastructure, can also be utilized to its full capacity. So I thought I'd bring this as an example. Enough about housing, I think I'll then move on to what we're doing around the inner city. So we've noticed that not just from the city side, the uptake for residential development, the appetite for it has been great. Yes, we do social housing development, but we've got other private players who are in the inner city who are also building residential development. So what it means is that from our side, what we need to do is that we call it reclaiming the capital city, making sure that the city is vibrant, that it's accessible, that the type of uses that you promote, they are very diverse. So moving from just shops and offices into residential areas, so the livability concept of the inner city that we really get to experience them. Most of the work that's taking place in the inner city, some of it especially around the CBD, it's a partnership between ourselves and the Department of Public Works, which obviously they've got their own, they've got their clients who are, we're trying to bring them back, government offices, into the inner city. Instead of them going into the periphery, your suburban areas such as your hassles and the like. So to do this, it's not just about bringing them back, but it's also about us making sure that your urban management program is intensified in a way that people feel safe there in the inner city. That it is clean, that people can also utilize the public transportation to get from the different to get to different points of the city. And for private sector investment, it was about us making sure that those urban development zone incentives that they are implemented and that we can attract people to invest in the city and retain them. The following slide is just showing you some of these projects, the inner city regeneration projects that we have. And with COVID then it looks much better projected on screen. But at your leisure, I'll let you just go through some of this. And we have a few videos where we wanted to show you what is going to happen around the government boulevard. The government boulevard being that one project that we're working with Public Works on. We've gone as far as now, council has is considering a land alienation process, which means that Public Works can start, can go, they can be on site so that these things are realized. Similarly with, if you flip your page, similarly with our civic precinct as well, you'll notice that there's a balance, an administrative element to the inner city project, and there's also a heritage element to our project, because we need to preserve that the historic and the heritage value of the city, and it needs to be expressed through space. That is that chairperson on what we're doing in the inner city. Maybe let me just talk about our bus rapid transit system or bus rapid transit. We call it RVA. Joburg calls it Rea Vaya. And somebody mentioned Harambe. Ours is RVA. All of them, they just mean let's go. They just totally use different languages. So TRT, we say it stitches the city together, Swanee Rapid Transit System. It stitches the city together. There's a relative success of the system, and I'll qualify when I say a relative success of the TRT. It's because it has acted as a catalyst for transformation, meaning we can already start seeing the results in terms of densification, in terms of mixed use, and value capturing of TRT. However, as a city, we're still asking ourselves a question, is TRT really the best model to integrate public transportation? Or should we not just ask as a city, but national treasury working with committees like yourself, really relook at the model to make sure that we achieve what is integrated public transportation system? I use three modes of transportation to get to the office. I use my car, and then I take the Caltrain bus. I take the Caltrain, and then I take the bus. And if the bus is not waiting, if when I get to the office and I need to go to another meeting, then I use our own TRT to get to Hatfield. If I need to go somewhere else, then I use the taxi. All using it's all different forms of transportation, and they are all not really integrated. Yes, we've got the system that are supposed to be a panacea for all of our public transportation problems. It's a question I'm leaving the committee with, and at your leisure, you'll also engage in discussions around this. Let alone the fact that was raised by my Joburg colleague to say that in the city region of Gauteng, we haven't integrated it. So it's different systems operating in the same geographic area, if you would like to call it that. We've got a 5-year plan for TRT, and it's depicted in the map that's in the page that follows. We've only opened one line, and it's a line between CBD and Hatfield. But the slide that follows shows that in terms of the grant budget that you've received and the expenditure, it shows you the trend. That there's been an increase in expenditure on the ICTS grant that we that we received from National Treasury. The few pictures that follow, they show you exactly what TRC is about. So that aerial view is showing you through Sunnyside, our TRC line that has been constructed, obviously goes showing an angle towards the CBD, so coming from Hatfield. And if you cast your eyes just below, you would see the point that I was making earlier on. What we've noticed is that since the introduction of TRC, there's been an increase in people making aesthetic improvements on their properties along the TRC line. But very important and very impressive for us is that the residential demand along those lines, because it's already in high-rise, the land goes on high-rise through high-rise buildings, the residential demand has increased. The community that deals with rental property, they say that they've reduced the time, the vacancy rate of the properties. So one property or a unit does not stay longer than a month unoccupied in your TRC line. And we've also noticed that where it's low-rise buildings, there are more applications for consolidation of size, for changing land use so that you build medium to high density residential areas. And I guess that's what Treasury and us want to see, the change in land use so that you've got more people living along this line so that you can increase people utilizing the system. Flip a page and you'll see in terms of the system's ridership, how the numbers have increased, or in fact the split of the people that are using our TRC system and our revenue figures around that. So we can tell you exactly who's using the system. Very interesting enough, most people that are using our system is adults and scholars. Meaning it's people that are going to work and people that are going to either university or they're going to school. And these numbers are not shocking to us because we've got a big population of students in the city. And our pensioners haven't disappointed either. They're using the system and it's very friendly towards them. By the way, let me just mention that it does have Wi-Fi and you can utilize it while you are commuting. That's enough story for TRT. Now on economic opportunities and economic growth. Lots to be said around here, but just a few points to raise is the economic sector support and us making sure that we pull all of our efforts towards one area. So we talk about SIPs, there's SIPs 2 and there's SIPs 7. The test now between all spheres of government is to say, we understand that you as a municipality you have this plan, and as national there are these plans with this particular outcome. How do we all do crowd all of our efforts into the space so that you realize what is contained in the National Development Plan and the various plans of government? We can still do more as the various spheres of government in addressing areas of collaboration and implementation. And we've focused a lot on initiatives that were aimed at addressing youth unemployment. For one reason, a majority of our population is very young. And we understand that most of them are not employed, but it's not only that, some of them, they've got particular skills and they are qualified. There was a question earlier on what is it that we're doing to make sure that our unemployed graduates access opportunities, why it is not ours to make sure that they are placed in various firms, but we can facilitate such opportunities. And it's a futuristic thing. In fact, for 2017-18, we've got a specific program that's going to identify them through our negotiation with industry and people that we do services, we do services with, that they are exposed to opportunities and they can be placed for employment. SMME development and some of the poverty alleviation programs that we do in the city. There's a lot that's been done there, but also harnessing on the rural economic development opportunity. So, if you were to visit the city and let's say you were an investor, where would we direct you to if you wanted to invest? That map, the next map on the next page, shows you exactly where we direct our investors. So if you are BMW, you are in our automotive and components node, which is in Rosslyn and Waterloo. We know exactly where tourism takes place in the city. We know where aerospace and defense industry can be located, so that the economic scale can be appreciated and things like those. Now, if I take you to the future, this is the second time that I'm taking you to the future, and I promise it's the last time. If I take you to the future, that area in Rosslyn, in the 17-18 financial year, we have set aside a huge budget to make sure that none of the investors in that area leave the city, either because we don't have adequate capacity in terms of bus services for them to stay there. And those plans, how we're going to roll out the infrastructure, is going to be a partnership between ourselves and the private sector, and provinces slowly coming in through an entity that they've established, which is the AIDC, to make sure that this is realized. We do acknowledge that our resources only are not going to make Rosslyn a reality for what we want it to become, but strategic partnership is going to be very important. Following slide talks about the infrastructure that we've developed to support growth. Among others, it's our ICT connectivity infrastructure, where we're trying to have wall-to-wall Wi-Fi connection in the city. Energy generation, which has received a huge focus. Even the projects that we've implemented in 2016-2017 have also indicated this. And over the past 2 years, with especially last year, 2016-2017, the operations at Warner Warm Airport and the money that we've allocated, it shows that we don't see ourselves as a regional player, Gauteng regional player, but as a national and an international player, and we're investing a lot towards the development of the airport. I'll just skim through the next slide, which talks about what has been the balanced approach for investment attraction in the city. So on one hand, we've got all these government incentives that our investors can access. But on the other hand, after the city, we've come up with an investment package or incentive package which people can utilize, or investors can utilize, to be drawn into the city to invest and to stay in the city. And among those things is us saying that, yes, we will be ahead in providing infrastructure, provided that you can come and invest in the city. It's about us saying that we will make sure that in terms of processes and systems, bureaucratic processes and systems, that our turnaround times are shortened for people to want to invest in the city and then be deterred to go to Johannesburg to invest. So we're making it friendlier to invest in the city. Now, employment opportunities, just a snapshot of this one. Yes, we can talk these things about investors, but at the end of the day, there are those households that must be supported. We've created about 168,000 work opportunities. The bulk of these were on EPWP, and we've supported 900 cooperatives through mentorships and training. Now, these cooperatives, we have to say that most of them, some of them are now working with, they're not just providing a service to the city, so they're not going to rely on us. They are even providing their services and supplying their goods to industries in and around the city. On average, over the past 5 years, we've managed to attract 2.5 billion rand of investment every year. That number already has increased, and we're hoping that in the next financial year, not that we're hoping, we'll set a target of about 10.5 billion rand for investment in the city. So it means that we really need to sort of continue with the good work that we're doing on our administrative processes to attract and retain. And then the next slide is talking to agriculture and tourism on what has been done in those areas. funded delivery in the city and what have we spent our grants on? Bottom, the bottom slide on the page that you're looking at. We've utilized our financial instruments to achieve equitable development in the city. So your urban rural investment, we haven't neglected our rural areas. We've employed systems that have encouraged efficiency, like e-procurement. So instead of having a human element hampering or delaying your procurement processes, we're glad to report to this committee that e-procurement is now assisting us to achieve better efficiencies, and we're hoping that when we come back to this committee, if we do ever come back, we can show you how much difference has that made. It came out of a realization that if you don't sort out your procurement issues, you're delaying the time at which people are going to get the service. So let's get that right so that we won't blame procurement processes on people not getting water, electricity, and things like those. We've also focused a lot on program and project evaluation. So we're able to say, this project is not performing, it's not performing, why is it not performing? And you don't keep the money on a project that is not performing, but you rather shift it to a project that is performing, but it's still in line with your strategic objectives and can still get you to the outcome that you want to achieve as a city. Flip the page over and you'll see, this is our overall CAPEX pay funding source. Most of our CAPEX, 73%, is your USDG grant, and you've got your PTIS. It makes sense that our PTIS is sitting at 17%, given that over the next 5 years, we'll still be rolling out PTIS. We've only opened one line of the system. 22% came from borrowings, and then we also utilized our own internal funding for our capital investment in the city. So it's a total CAPEX budget of 4.5 billion rand. MMC was talking earlier on about the 950 million rand, which was the acquisition of smart meters, and she did say that the project is under judicial review, so it was included as part of this. We have allocated this money, most of the money that we've got under CAPEX. Most of it is going towards your utility services, which is your energy and energy, electricity, water, and then another portion is going towards public transportation. So rollout or development of your roads and your stormwater network. And obviously other departments also receive their share, but the focus has really been about providing basic services. That is why we can report on the 81% or so in terms of access to services. The next slide then shows you how have we spent this money that was allocated to us over the previous financial year. Maybe if I give you a minute to just go through the slide, cut your eyes and focus on certain numbers, MMC.
Can I just direct you? You will see that actually the only element that is underspent is the first line of the table, which is council funding, and it stands at 2%, and the reason is the 950 million that for the smart meter project is included in council funding at that point. So in total, although the table says we spent 74% of our capital expenditure, if we exclude the 950 million, which we have no intention of spending, our spend increases to 94%, and that's the note at the bottom of the table. I just wanted to highlight that because, as I said in the beginning, that amount of 950 million really skews everything if you don't understand what it is we're looking at. So we have to eliminate the 950 million that was on the budget as intention to be spent. It's not going to be spent, and it wasn't spent in the financial year. So our actual spend increases to 94.
Thank you, MMC. Now, the next few slides are as if this was an evidence file for performance. These are the things that you would include to just show that you really did do what you would do with the money. They're showing some of the big projects that we have started in the city as part of our capital expenditure program of 2016-2017. You'll see there that we're assessing on the purification plant, Temba, Kirkhart, receiver manner. What's interesting, in fact, even if you flip the page over, what's interesting with these is that most of these projects are to service our semi-urban and our rural areas, and they're playing a dual role for household support and also for economic development, as I made the point earlier on. In conclusion, chairperson, which is the last slide, I'd like to just state that we've made progress, a good progress in provision of services. And we making it a point again to raise the fact that there seems to be a concern from the city of Tshwane on how we talk about spatial integration, about spatial reform, and then come up with projects that are defeating that very end that we're trying to achieve. And I made an example about the mega housing projects that are proposed or that are being rolled out by province. And we also emphasize that we do need to focus our efforts when we talk about economic development, especially in our industrial areas, the three spheres of government. The key point that we've made, we can't overemphasize that. And also that we also acknowledge that due to the economic climate, we need to focus on our internal funding to make sure that we deliver on the promise, on the promises that we make in all these beautiful documents that get approved year in and year out.
Thank you. Chairperson, you will notice that we distributed two documents. My name is Ntate. We distributed two documents. The first document focus was on the infrastructure site, as was indicated in the invitation. And then the next document, Chairperson, is also in the form of a presentation. I will just concentrate on the four slides because those four slides are the slides that talk to the overall...
Sorry. To which documents are you referring?
It was distributed by the committee officer.
Secretary will just check, but then all will be seen.
Appropriated on the operating side. Just on the revenue side, we've also given a slide, Chairperson, the next slide, that indicates the different sources of revenue. As you can see there again, the last row that talks about gain on disposable of PPE, that's where the acquisition of the smart meter is, and that's where the under recovery of revenue is. In terms of the other line item, same as a Kululeni, it's water, which is under by 156.2 million. And again, these are the restrictions that have been implemented by the city of Tshwane. But it's also important to note that even on the bulk services, we'll also have the kind of savings in there. And then on the expenditure side, Chairperson, I did indicate that there are a lot of year and accruals that we still need to go through. But Chairperson, the slide following the expenditure, this is a slide that I just wanted to demonstrate to the committee that we as the City of Tshwane, we are able to spend all the grants that have been appropriated to us, to indicate that last year we spent about 99% of the grants, and then in the current year again, we spent about 96% of the grant. The grants that have not been spent, which is the housing for top structures, the SAs, the HSDG, the reason why the city could not spend the full allocation is because we were waiting for province again to ensure that the projects are enrolled with the National Home Builders Registration. So that's the only reason why that particular grant has not spent. But if you look at all the other grants, we were able to spend about 98% of the grant. That is on the operating side. And then, and the following slide, on the capital side, again, Chairperson, we are sitting at 94% of all the grants that we have received from National. On the USDG, we plan to spend about 100% of that grant. The PTIS, we spent 97% Chairperson. So those are the slides that I thought I must just highlight to the committee just to indicate that we do not plan to underspend or underspend on the grants, but we plan to fully utilize the funds that have been appropriated to us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Done?
Thank you very much.
Yes, we're done. As I said in the beginning, it's very difficult to follow when you take us through the figures at this space. But our research unit and content advisor will assist us to do a more in-depth analysis. But thank you for the presentation. Any members' questions? First advance, number one. Number two, Mike, proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a few comments. I think really I can also commend the people of Tshwane for what they're doing. It is quite evident that things are happening there. Then I have an interesting question. I'll
come back to that. I'll explain my interest in that. Is that government boulevard?
I just want to know what are the time frames for that, and has it started yet? Then I'll respond to that.
Chairperson, thank you. My question is directed to the MNC, who gave a good broad outline in terms of the contractual obligations, in terms of the 900 or 950 million ones. Now, when I looked at the presentation, I listened to what you said, and we interrogated the financial circumstances. Very simply, what when you go to court and the ruling goes against the municipality, surely now there's going to be a huge financial obligation and huge repercussions in terms of your planning, in terms of rolling out your budget going forward. What checks and balances are there in place? How do you see the scenario in case the ruling goes against the municipality? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. think we must learn from one another what is the best practice. Look at the city of Mexico. 21 million people in the city, in the metro, being transported to their place of work. Secondly, you question the issue of housing. I refer you to KZN, all the members. We were there in 2014-15, a housing project. We visited that late afternoon, early evening. That development is actually a very good development. Why? It's not only houses being built, it's a total infrastructure of schools, of clinics, of playgrounds for the little ones, not playing in the street. It's how this was designed. I think that is a model that we can build on and learn from. Excuse me, I just want to make these few comments. You referred to it and see your issue with the unauthorized, irregular, blah, 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 expenditure. Here's the law.
I know.
Just follow the law. Finish and plow. And though the trespass, there must be a consequence. Not just on paper. Mm-hmm. Things must be happening in terms of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the Treasury and the Auditor General and the ATC, Anti-Corruption Task Team comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's such a structure. Operated very well in the portal. The processes are just very, very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
We were there regarding that intervention that we're running for about 4 years. This committee monitored it. So let's crack down if there was mismanagement of finances, let's crack down on it. Water harvesting.
Yeah.
I met this morning with the FNC, the new chapter. This country seriously must have a new rethink of how we are using water. When a school is built, there's no gutters. But they complain they don't have reserve water. But there's no gutters, they don't harvest the water. There's no tank on the corner of the building. Yes, that's the things we have to look at. That must change. Harvesting water. Even in the township, the community houses, the settlements must be allowed and give the opportunity and put in that position to harvest water. And that is where the government comes in. To make it possible for them to do it. And I invite you to my region, Namako, where we have to adapt or die, and we adapt to the principle of harvesting water. Kaikong High School is an eco school. It was the first school in the province that started harvesting water. Kaikong High School, in the town of Kaikong, along the N7. I'm very proud. So we will have to seriously look at this and roll out these programs. Over to you for your response. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Without going into too much detail, I'd like to address the issue of the smart meters. And maybe it's important that we just step back a moment and understand where did this come from. In 2013, the previous administration entered into a contract with a supplier without going through the bidding process. The supplier was appointed to replace 800,000 electricity, no, I'm lying, 600,000 electricity meters with smart meters. That was the plan. They were supposed to roll it out within a particular period of time, And for that service, they were going to receive a commission of 19.5 cents of every rand that is sold through those prepaid schemes. Right. Now, if you look at the financial position of the service of electricity, it doesn't even make a profit of 19.5% on itself. But that contract is used to pay the service provider 19.5 cents. The cost of only providing services through 13,000 meters that were done in 2 years' time. They only managed to replace 13,000 meters. And they replaced them as not the people who are bad payers or the people who you require to assist in paying for services. They started with the low-hanging fruit. In other words, all the big industrial consumers, all the big users of electricity, that's where the smart meters were installed. So the result is, in the 2 years up to then, and I'll come back to the exact numbers now, a huge amount of money was paid out in terms of commission, which had a serious impact on the financial viability of the city. In 2015, because of the fact that the Auditor General started asking questions about the contract, etc., etc., they decided to cancel the contract, not following any of the NSMI procedures in terms of amending or cancelling the contract. They cancelled the contract and changed the conditions of the contract to reflect that they would now only receive 9.5 cents, but that we put in an escrow account 10 cents of every rand of electricity sold through the prepaid meters for the payment of the infrastructure and the system at the end of a year to the tune of 950 million rand. Now, you can do the calculation. If you take 950 million rand and you divide it by 13,000 meters and we ignore the commission that we've already paid, that is a cost of almost 80,000 per meter that we have to now, in addition, pay to the commission that we've already paid for the system and the meters, etc. Now, I think it doesn't take much of a logic to understand that this is a problem. They then went, the previous administration, and appointed a new contract for the further rollout of the prepaid meter, on condition that this new contractor has to pay the city the 950 million that we are going to pay the previous contract. At that point, the Auditor General said, no go. This is unacceptable. Apart from the fact that the contract is deemed irregular, from a city's perspective, we were supposed to pay out the 950 million by the end of June 2016. As the opposition at that point in time in the city, we went into a partnership with AfriForum to court to stop the payment of the 950 million, which we succeeded in doing. The judge at that point in time said there was a case in front of him for the review of the whole contract, which he now wants to be brought back onto the roll because he had serious concerns about the contract as a whole. Now that is the case that's going to be heard in October. Our senior counsel as a city, and before I get to that, the city originally as opposed the court action because they were the owners of the contract. When the new administration entered into, we said we can't oppose this application because we agree with it. It is unsustainable, it is irregular. So the city withdrew officially as an opposition to that case that was brought by AfriSaga to the High Court. That matter, as I said, will be dealt with in October. It is in front of the High Court in October. Our senior counsel that is assisting to provide proof of documentation, etc., etc., his view is that we have a very, very strong case. That whole contract will be deemed irregular, and that we will then have to start negotiating on what is fair compensation for that contract as a whole, from the start when the contract was entered into until the time that it was terminated. And I'm putting that in inverted commas. The total amount of money that has been paid out, or that is lying in the escrow account, in case we have a problem with the court case, totals 3.5 billion rand. That is what we've paid out as a city over three financial years, for 13,000 metres and the supply of electricity through 13,000 metres. So, we have a very positive attitude that whole contract will be deemed irregular and that we will be able to extricate without paying the 950 million or whatever else has been accumulated subsequent to the total of 950 million. Because of the fact that it's not been legally resolved yet, we accrue the 10 cents in terms of the cancellation account in a separate investment account, which we are not utilizing. That has accumulated to the tune of 500 million. So over and above the 950, we sit with another 500 million that is on investment in case we have a problem of the case. So we've tried to make provision for the event that we might lose the case. As I said, there is a separate contract. It is a flow over from the previous contract, which we also deem to be questionable, the process that was followed. I must categorically state, we are supporters of smart meters for electricity supply. It has a huge amount of benefits for the city in terms of revenue collection, in terms of preventing illegal connections, in terms of preventing tampering with meters, etc., etc. So we are in favour of prepaid meters, and particularly smart meters that have additional technicalities to suit us. What I didn't mention is the meters that they installed was not compliant to SABS standards. So they weren't even compliant in terms of what is supposed to be a smart meter. And that is a saga that one could actually write a whole book on. But that's the background on the smart meters. The only other thing that I would like to touch on before Nasipu talks to you is two aspects. The one is on water harvesting. We quite agree. We have approach towards green economy and stimulating and encouraging consumers to do exactly that. So particularly in our development of our the investment into the city, that we focus on that. We had a whole week of economic sustainability in the city, where we invited all the various role players in the sector to come and talk to us about how do you instill sustainability on all your services, not only water, but electricity, mining, all of the sectors that have an impact in the local government environment. So we had a whole week of discussions on that, and the plan is to take those proposals that come out of those sessions that we had and to start implementing it in terms of our building plan, etc. So we have a plan as far as that's concerned. Just a brief comment on our integrated development framework. I cannot agree more to say that when you do integrated development, that it has to combine residential, commercial, and office space. So that you bring the people to where they shop, that the people is there and the economic growth can take place. What was envisaged as well going forward is that we have specific nodes, and Nosuka touched on one or two of them, but there are others. Ekandastria in the Bronkhorstspruit area. North of Pretoria, what is the other one I'm thinking about? I just lost it. Babalesi, which has gone down tremendously. But it's closer to where people stay, it's closer to, regenerating or revitalizing those economic nodes in the new year to be able to attract investment. And as Nasipho said, the target is 10 billion rand. We've already achieved 2.5 billion rand with the assistance of the private sector. So we're very, very positive in terms of the partnership between the government and the city and the private sector in ensuring that this growth and development happens. But integrated development has to recognize all those phases. It can't just recognize housing. It has to combine it with others. Thanks.
Chairperson, just a few points that you raised. Maybe let me just start with the government boulevard. It's a multi-year project, and obviously our main investor being the Department of Public Works, which in turn works with their clients, their various departments that they are working with. It's not something that is going to start in the next financial year and conclude. But from where we are as a city, where we were supposed to intervene, it was to make sure that in terms of the setting the building codes and coming up with an urban development plan, a precinct plan, introduction of certain specific bylaws. For example, you can't trade within so many meters of a government building and things like those. We've done all of those things. And we've done enough. I've mentioned that we've gone as far as council is now considering a land alienation report, which is going to make sure that work starts. So if all goes according to plan, within the next financial year, we should start seeing work happening on the ground or on that one. Now, around some of the issues that you, Chairperson, have raised, they were comments, and I'm really taking them as comments, and we were raising them in the spirit of collaboration and improvement in how we work. I can't agree more with you when you talk about the transit the TRT or a transit oriented system, to say that you need the numbers. Without the numbers, the system is going to fail. Now, a big question is that in our South African cities, do we have the numbers to be rolling out such a system? You were talking about, did you say 21 million or something like that? Swane has got about close to now 4 million people, not living in town, but living all over town, 120 kilometers north to south, more than that east to west. Do we have the numbers for these systems to work? Or should we be looking at alternatives that are going to supplement this? Even the fact that I know I may be in trouble with my colleagues from Treasury, but I don't think I'll be in trouble. In fact, I think they will support me on this one. Even in the fact that it's a single use for a specific lane in town, whereas other modes of transportation, which are also meant to transit as many people, allow for various modes of transportation like the tram system and the like. However, we do know that the instruments that are utilized by the Department of Public Transportation don't allow for funding or issuing grants for trams and things like those, even if there are investors or people who are willing to invest on that. So it's a bigger discussion that we still need to engage in, but we're giving it credit, and you saw in the slides that I took you through, we're giving the BRT system credit for at least trying to get us to densify, and for at least us trying to get a single mode of transportation that is reliable, which we never had in the past. Say it's reliable and. But we're saying we can still do more, and we need to engage in these discussions. And it's a similar thing with housing, the point that you were raising, that example that you have. But we're not going to achieve it if the department that is supposed to build schools chooses to completely ignore the fact that there's a new township being established, and therefore you need to rework your model to make sure that schools are provided in these particular areas. And if we don't, through the three spheres of government, work on a plan that says settlement is being developed right, these are the things that need to be put in place, or the type of investments that must take place. Treasury talks a lot to us about the integrated urban network system, and they talk about integration zones. And we keep saying to them, in those integration zones, you need province and national to invest. So subject them to the same kind of scrutiny when you go through their budget that you put us through, to make sure that they transform space through their own intervention. So my point was to say, I'm glad that the chairperson of the committee agrees with us on this. We can only do it if we're all working towards the same objective.
You see, the scrutiny must be a universal one. That's the point. You can't have a model here and another model for this first and the third model in the other economy. There must be similarity, a uniformity, that's what. So, the latest development, and you must now correct me, you're from the Southern Cape, on the book, is George. I think they transporters, and that thing is working at a small scale, but the point is it's working. It's working. And the former Minister of Transport was part of that development, launching, and you name it. So let's look at the best practice. That's the point we want to make as a committee. Are there any other remarks from you before we go to Treasury? Oh, you want to add?
I'll just say something. Chairperson, just coming back to that government boulevard, I was on that serving on that committee in the early 2000s.
He's giving away his age. Carry on.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We won't talk about age. just from our side, please. We in terms of the brief, we could have added a whole lot of other things. We could have given you our performance report in terms of actual numbers of what was originally planned and what was achieved. But that is not that we didn't include that. So if there's any additional information that you require from us, please feel free. And we're willing to provide you with anything that we have available. Our performance report, which is now going to be audited as well for the first time this year, on the previous financial year, looks at targets that were set originally and how did we achieve those targets. So if there's any additional information, you're welcome to ask and we will provide. Thank you.
We will definitely rely on the agency's report that will be available during the course of this year. And yes, and then engage with the municipalities and the treasury as well as the agency. There is a representative of the Auditor General. Treasury, over to you. You've sat through 5.5 hours listening. Let's hear from you. What are your remarks, your inputs, and the system?
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I want to first acknowledge all of the members of the committee for sitting through those 5.5 hours and another 2 hours yesterday on what can sometimes feel some very detailed, arcane, technical issues, but are really about the future of the cities that we're building for people in South Africa. And South Africa's future is indeed an urban future, like it is in many other jurisdictions in the world. So we need to get this right. I think yesterday we laid out that vision and long-term strategy for urban spatial transformation in South African cities as the driver of faster and more inclusive growth in the country. And we looked at why there were those constraints arising, structural constraints to growth arising from our urban spatial form. And I think that the questions that came up today really looked at various aspects of that in the particular city context. The committee questioned yesterday that maybe the strategy that was laid out was too abstract, and we said let's come back today and look to see are these ideas, are these approaches, are these instruments that are being offered being taken up by the cities. And I think certainly today we learned that in the three cities that have shared their programs and progress with us, we can see a clear connection to those ideas. So I think it's very important progress to acknowledge, because you're starting to see that intergovernmental cooperation in forging a practical common strategy towards changing our urban future in South Africa. Our cities are growing very fast, and I completely understand the drive of members of the committee to want to respond to today's problems that we face in our cities. But today's problems that people in informal settlements are facing, parents are facing and not being able to get their kids to school, the high cost of transport and so forth, and those are very valid concerns. But we also need to acknowledge that how we address today's challenges will lay the foundation of the city that we're building for tomorrow. So we can end up, if we're not careful, if we're not planning, undertaking this in a very planned, thoughtful, strategic manner, deepening our problems over time. And that's not just my analysis, that's the analysis of the National Development Plan, that's the analysis of the Integrated Urban Development Framework. And yes, it's the analysis of many academics as well. So we've got to break out of this path of urban growth that we're currently on, which pushes poor people in higher densities to the periphery and keeps our cities racially segregated and so forth. So, you know, these are very unusual cities that we live in. They're very inefficient, they're very exclusionary, and if we address today's problems just for today without that longer-term focus, we are going to embed those problems. They're never going to go away. I think what was encouraging to see from the presentation today, the three different cities, is A, they're acknowledging the spatial challenge. B, they're clearly articulating their strategy, but C, we're starting to see not just the strategy as a matter of words, like perhaps government boulevard can sometimes be, but practical actions that are happening. You don't build a city in a night. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. It's built over generations of effort. It's our generation that needs to decisively break from the path that's been established for the last 200 years, certainly for our coastal cities, and slightly shorter for our inland cities. We also said, I think, yesterday that we needed to get to two key things. The first is, one, if you're going to rebuild our cities, reconstruct our cities, you've got to get governance in the cities themselves right. I think Tshwane, and I think the team from Tshwane needs to be acknowledged for the focus they're putting on stabilization, on getting the basics right, making sure that their revenue systems are stabilized, their expenditure management systems are stabilized, because that's the foundation for being able to take on the bigger generational challenge of reconstructing our cities. We talked about the need for vision and leadership, and I think what we're seeing is the vision and leadership starting to come from the cities, and I believe that is something, and certainly from the Treasury side, that we believe needs to be encouraged. The authority to undertake that city-level vision and leading the urban development process is something that is assigned to our metropolitan municipalities, because they better understand their context. But they need to be given the authority to lead. And that's an intergovernmental, a very important intergovernmental question. The members raised at one point, I think it was in relation to both the Ekurhuleni and the Johannesburg presentations, and from the chair, you made the point very powerfully. Partnerships are so important, not just intergovernmental partnerships, but partnerships with society. 80% of investment in cities is not from the public sector. It's from the work, it's from households, even households in informal settlements, spending their hard-earned money to put up a structure. That's fixed investment in the built environment. The 80% of that comes from households and firms, not from the public sector. Those partnerships are absolutely vital, and I think it's a big unanswered question that I don't think the committee should be satisfied quite with the answers that it got in that respect on how well those partnerships have been built. But it's beyond that. It's the one needs to get into the pipeline of project development and implementation. And that's obviously where the Treasury is deeply interested. That's where the committee is interested in terms of how public funding is actually being spent on time in the right places for the right things. So those are very important set of questions. But the second set of issues is around the enabling environment. And it started, I think, to come out today with the cities starting to bring out tensions in the enabling environment. These aren't political party tensions. These are the intergovernmental tensions in the environment. When, in terms of grants, we've just, people raised the question around the bus rapid transit system. If the national government, the Department of Transport says, you shall have a bus rapid transit system, how do we know that is appropriate to every context? It can't be rolled on in a cookie-cutter fashion across every city in the country, because each of our cities has different dynamics in their transport network. That technology may be important, and is important, in particular parts of each of our cities, but it can't be a universal solution. The same could be said with human settlements. The same could be said around economic development. One needs to make sure that the ability of the discretion of the metropolitan authorities, with the capabilities and the plans that they've demonstrated, is enabled to make the right specific choices, the right specific technology choices, locational choices, within an environment of accountability. So that's the challenge in the enabling environment, and that there are particular issues that I think were pulled out today quite well. The one area that I thought was quite weak was around the measurement.
Yes.
The argument gets, and members raised it in a number of ways. They raised it, can't we get a standardized template? And that's certainly something on the financial side is an easier thing to do, and as we explained yesterday,
Section 71 in the area of the mail, that's step number one.
Yes, so on the financial side, and with the MSCOA reform, there's clearly a strong template already in place. On the non-financial side, as Jan Hutting explained yesterday, we've been moving systematically to try and create that template on measuring the outcome, so that we're not measuring all, it's not just any facts that you want to report, but it's integrated to the strategy, and it's integrated to targets around that, and it can respond to the medium-term strategic framework of government as a whole. So that brings much more legibility to the environment. I'm not sure at the level of the planning whether national government in fact even has the competency in relation to the Constitutional Court judgment to be too specific on a particular template for the planning, but certainly the approach that we've taken today through the built environment performance plan is an intergovernmental partnership approach, where we have a very frank, open, honest, and most importantly, ongoing discussion with each of our metros, both collectively and individually. And you can see the results that have started to emerge from the sustained investment in a partnership rather than just purely the regulation on the planning side. But we do believe that there is scope for much greater transparency around the measurement side, and I think that is an area that perhaps the committee would like a much more detailed briefing on, because the amount of technical work and tears that have been shared in trying to bring alignment to that system are quite significant, and I think we've made some excellent progress there. The final point I would make, sir, is that a couple of times you've mentioned that the committee would really benefit from practical oversight. And that is something that I strongly, strongly urge the committee to follow through on. I think that there are real opportunities. We have actually piloted that for other cities to understand what's going on in Johannesburg, in Tshwane, in Cape Town, where we've actually developed a day-long program where we can take the leadership of our cities, and we've done this for mayors and so forth, on a journey through the city that looks at the good, the bad, and the progress, where we're actually using public transport to get to Mabopane, we're using public transport to get to Khayelitsha, and understand and getting to really have experience the lived reality of people having to navigate this on a daily basis. We would really welcome the opportunity to have the committee join us on a trip like that. The senior management of Tshwane in the next 2 weeks, I think it is, or the next month, is actually taking themselves on a trip from the center of Tshwane to Mabopane on public transport to look at what they're doing and where they need to be to help make the urban system work better for the majority of people in Tshwane. So if there is something the committee would like to follow up on, we would be honored to try and assist.
Are there any other inputs from your colleagues? You done? Thank you for the presentations. All the members, as you said, when we started our term in 2014, for this 5 years, we have to enhance good governance, sound financial management and accountability. It's my responsibility when I talk to the people in my constituency to account to them in terms of taxpayers' money that is being spent. If you look at the national revenue, where's the money going to? Who are we keeping account? Same in municipalities, same in measures. It's very important that through our work and our endeavors that we shape the future. That's our responsibility. That's what we get in terms of the Constitution. It's very important that every sector in South Africa must put every bit of energy and make a contribution to grow the economy. We are at the turning point. And that's the reality. We are at the turning point. And that's what the people outside expected from us. But that's where we must take hands, everyone, in every sector, to come to that solution. Thank you for your presentations honoring this commitment. We are going into our committee work now, reports, minutes, etc. And the program, there was a program meeting this morning, and I worked for the format. So we release you when you travel to our safety and do what you do to your best. Thank you. It's our job. But thank you very much for being here. Honourable members, the report on the provincial treasuries has been circulated twice. Excuse me. It was circulated yesterday. I hope members had the opportunity to read it. Can we get the indication? Yes. Are you ready that we can consider this report in comment?
Yes,
thank you for that, honourable member. Then you will see there is the report plus an annexure. Because when I sat with the team, I told them, this is going to become a public document, in these 80 scenes. And the person outside this meeting must be able to understand what we actually did. When we talk about unauthorized expenditure, irregular, etc., and put it in a table, also the outcomes of the audit reports, that it makes more sense. So it's the first time that we do this. It was never done before. So all the members, I put to you the report that circulated. I put to you page 1. It's 20 pages, 21 pages. Yeah, it's lengthy. There's a lot of detail. It's 30 years. With your approval, we will then go to the recommendations as you request. The recommendation, there's the observations we made on page 16. Are you in agreement with that? What we observed? Then page 17.12, the recommendations. Coming up with a solution, if I can call it that. Excuse me. 12.2, that's why you get to know all. Okay, or you agree, or three. 12, no, we're not going to abstain. 12.3. 12. No, serious, all of them are serious. 12.4. You want to go back to 12.2?
Yeah. 12.2. What I was saying is that we don't confine it to medicine only, the society management. Don't confine it to medicine only. Yes, make it broader.
Broader?
Yes, that's my question.
Honorable Montara?
Thank you. The recommendation is speaking to supply chain, review supply chain management processes, but I don't think provinces can really do that. What we need to emphasize is that supply chain management processes must be followed in line with the PSMA, but be more... Sure, I come out of two other meetings now. They must be more favorable towards locally manufactured procurement. And
it's not,
it will cover not only medicine.
Yes, sir. Do you have that one? You've got it? Solani, you've got it? 12.2, 12.3? 12.4? Yeah. 12.5? 12.6, 12.7, 12.8, 12.9, 10, 12.11,
can, we've had a recommendation similar to this before on the rationalization of public entities. Can we now say that provinces must finalize the rationalization of public entities? Because I think they've been reporting that they're doing it, but it must come to finalization at some point, I think.
Fine. Okay, 12.11. 12.12. 12.13. 12.14. 12.15. 12.16. 12.17. 12.18. 12.19. 12.20. Easter we can leave that one. 12:22, we take it out.
Combine.
Previous point. Yes, I'm listening.
Yeah, Chair, maybe on the issues of STM broadly, I think if you make sure that the recommendation around STM couples with different aspects, because they're almost repetitive, but focusing on different issues. But our issue was about supply chain and then the STM. So it must be adherent to PFMA, but was so it's like for instance 12.24 must also the same thing about adherence to PFMA. So if we can have just one recommendation. Yeah, so it's 12.22, 12.23, 12.24 one recommendation that speaks to adherence of PFMA and enforcing local procurement, locally produced and sourced procurement, etc. Then you can deal with
That's 12:24. Right up to 24. All right. I just want to make a block here. Thank you. 12:25. Round 26, fine. Round 27, round 28.
Round 28 is also a repetition.
Round 28.
Oh,
second.
It's also a repetition. Can you just find the number 12.4?
Which one?
12:28 and 12.4. Speak to the same thing.
12:28 and 12.4.
Thanks. If it can be combined.
Combined. 12.4. Okay. 12:29. That's fine. Then 12:30. Thank you. Honourable members, that is all the corrections now. I put the report to you, but although adopting it, I want this to be circulated after the corrections have been made. Time for the planet. So if you can do the correction, as indicated, and then just recirculated to us. So with the corrections, and I put this on the table now for adoption, if you want, we move for adoption on the Motara. Are there seconders for adoption? On the Gaylor? Second. Section of the members that covers that. There's one set of minutes that was circulated referring to the meeting of the 28th of June, briefing by the National Treasury on the provincial budgets and expenditure for the 2016-17 financial year, briefing by the KZN provincial treasury, consideration of minutes. I put to you page 1. Yes.
Chair, the member of the ESCO committee, KZN, is not Ms. B. Crazy.
Yeah.
So, that's how Chair is. ABC,
member of the executive council.
Yes, yes. Ms. B. Crazy is the ABC of Gauteng.
Yeah, ABC of Gauteng.
Not KZN. You have number 3, briefing by Northern Cape Provincial Treasury, which is incorrect. And then the member of EXCO is Ms. B. Crissy again, is incorrect.
Work that we can do on the phone, what I should be doing.
There's nothing. Next week you must go and do lots of consistency work. Yes.
In terms of the NCP program, there's nothing, but there can be political engagement. That you must be ready.
No, you must be ready
for that one. Over members, thank you very much. This matter you can discuss outside the meeting room. You're welcome to do that. It's not on the agenda. Order. Honourable members, I thank you for your indulgence. We work for 6 hours and 5 minutes. Yes. It's a hard-working committee, and I appreciate the energy you put into the meetings.
You know, I like your comment on the two prisons from the two metros. I hope it doesn't repeat itself, because it makes some of us to be quiet. Because we can't make comments on things that we receive, because we have to compare the previous document that we had from human settlement, from national treasury. So it is really unacceptable that people come into the meeting and then distribute documents. It's totally unacceptable, and it should not be accepted in the future.
No, you are 100% correct. That's why I made the point, because we must mention I couldn't do it.
Precisely,
that's the thing you call a fax machine. Yes. What is so difficult?
No, you cover that.
Thank you. All the members, this meeting is adjourned. If you travel safely. The traffic is very high at this moment.
Ah, no.